Welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces on KTALLP with Walt Rubel and Peter Goodman, co-hosting. And for this half-hour segment, our guests are Dr. David Lightfoot and PhD candidate Simon Dineski. They're up at UNM. We're going to talk about the serious crisis in insect populations diminishing, including some here in the Southwest that you guys have worked with, and what the legislature has done in terms of trying to help with that problem by changing the Game of Fish Department to the Game and Fish Department to the Department of Wildlife. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Glad we got you on the line. What would you, if we were sitting on a train and I said, oh boy, what do you do? And you were going to tell me it had to do with the insects. What would be sort of the first paragraph you'd tell me about the problem with diminishing insect populations? What is it? How bad it is? Why does it matter to us?
Well, we have been studying insects here in New Mexico for quite some time, and globally, other entomologists around the world, particularly in Western Europe and the Eastern United States, had been monitoring insect populations, particularly in Europe, monitoring moths and butterflies, bees, even generally flying insects for decades. And about 10, 15 years ago, they started noticing big declines in the number of insects that they were seeing. And a series of papers came out in various journals over the last decade describing these declines. And we thought here in New Mexico, because we don't face a lot of the environmental issues that are apparently causing those declines in those other regions, that being massive land development for agriculture and for urbanization, along with pesticides and other chemicals, and even light pollution at night that interferes with night flying insects. So we did not really expect to have declines here in New Mexico, but I personally have been monitoring grasshopper populations at the Jornada Experimental Range just out of Las Cruces and at the Civieta National Wildlife Refuge up near Socorro. And that has been going on since 1990. And about 10 or 15 years ago, I noticed that populations were dropping and I was not seeing some species that should be there. We have another long-term study of native bees at the Civieta Wildlife Refuge that's run through the Civieta Long-Term Ecological Research Program here at UNM. And we've been noticing the same thing happening since about 2000 when that study started.
Isn't there also a butterfly in the Sacramento Mountains?
Yes, and I'm going to let Simon talk about that. He's our butterfly expert.
Yeah, so for butterflies, we've up until the last decade, we really started getting a lot of data on the Southwest. And in fact, there was just a paper that came out last year that showed that butterfly declines are worse in the Southwest of the United States than anywhere in North America. And they indicated that in the last 20 years, they thought we'd lost 54% of our butterfly abundance.
Why? Why do they think?
Because the air Southwest is already so dry, and the butterflies here are already living on the edge of the dry conditions that they can tolerate. And so when things get a little drier, yeah, they tend to be more threatened here than in other places.
Gotcha.
And so butterflies are charismatic insects. People tend to like them more than wasps or flies or other things. And so they've been kind of leading the charge on insect conservation in New Mexico, and we know they're in dire need. And so just 2 years ago, the Sacramento Mountain checker spot became the first protected insect in the state of New Mexico because the state of New Mexico didn't protect any insects because of the regulatory change, which you alluded to and we'll talk to about later. But the Sacramento Mountain Checker Spot became our first protected insect 2 years ago. And unfortunately, Dave can really touch on this story. The Sacramento Mountain Checker Spot has had this really long, sad history leading up to its decline and eventual listing. So,
tell us that history in a moment, but one question. What they're protected, but what can you actually do? I mean,
that's
you
what
can't,
I take it.
Can't
how
keep
does that
the
work?
Drought. You can't stop the drought.
Well, not only that, I don't know what it is, but people swat insects not knowing what they are.
But yeah, what can you do? What can we do?
A really good question. I think the biggest thing, most insects are declining because their habitats are declining. So I think a lot of habitat restoration, planting native plants and nectar, and helping to create healthy functioning habitats that are going to be more like drought resistant when they're healthy and going to hold water better and things like that. So habitat restoration is definitely the biggest one. Dave, I'm sure, has many more.
Are there specific, leads to a perhaps frivolous question, but if you live in Las Cruces, New Mexico, are there things you would do well to plant, specific plants that would attract butterflies and, help in your little way?
Yes, that is a trend now nationwide. In fact, Congress passed a pollinator protection bill it's about maybe 5 to 10 years ago. And then nationally, many states have been trying to conserve their pollinating insects. It started out with the focus on the European honeybee. You may recall over the last decade, reports about declines in European honeybees, and we've pretty much determined that was due to the management of commercial hives, hauling them around to different locations, exposing them to all kinds of pesticides. And now more recently, climate change is having an effect on European honeybees, an adverse effect. So many states have started pollinator protection programs. New Mexico passed a memorial for a pollinator protection plan that is in the works right now. In fact, we're helping with that effort. And so that was something initiated by our legislature. And then Senate Bill 5 last year was passed by the legislature. And as you mentioned, that for the first time in state history, allowed our former Game and Fish Department, which is now a wildlife department, to recognize insects as wildlife, as animals, not just pests. So now the state is stepping in to help with the conservation of our insects. And there are a number of programs. There's a nonprofit organization for insect conservation called the Xerces Society, and they are working across the country and particularly here in New Mexico to help educate people about planting flowers for pollinators and other insects, in general, landscaping for wildlife. So people individually can do that. I do that personally. One of the big issues I want to mention with insect conservation in New Mexico is that, number one, we don't even know how many species of insects there are in the state. We have been conducting inventories of insects for the National Park Service across the state, and we've surveyed pretty much all the parks and monuments in New Mexico, most recently White Sands National Park. Every time we do these surveys, we find new species of insects that are unknown to science. So we're still discovering new species here in New Mexico. Globally, people are discovering new species, especially in the tropical regions. And right now, we know that there are over 1 million documented species of insects on the planet. Based on estimates from the numbers of new species being found, there are probably 2 to 5 million species of insects on the planet.
Wow.
Compare that to vertebrate animals. There are 40,000 species of vertebrate animals on planet Earth, compared to probably 2 million insect species that we're still discovering. So another thing about New Mexico is we are in a biodiversity hotspot geographically. We're located in a region where eastern flora and fauna, particularly Great Plains and Gulf of Mexico, come into southeastern New Mexico. We have Colorado Plateau coming into the northwestern part, Sonoran Desert in the southwestern part, and Rocky Mountains coming down from Colorado into central New Mexico. So we have a mix of species of plants and animals from all over North America converging right here in New Mexico. On top of that, we have tremendous topographic diversity from 13,000 feet to 4,000 feet elevation, along with all kinds of landscape features like plains, sand dunes, forests, mountain slopes, streams, lakes, and rivers. So we have a lot of different habitats for species on top of this big biogeographic influence from outside regions. So that means we have a real high diversity here. We estimate about 10 to 15,000 species of insects right here in New Mexico. And for example, we know we have 1,000 species of native bees. Those are native bees that evolved right here in New Mexico, not the European honeybee, but native bees. And all of those different species of bees require different species of flowers for their nectar and pollen sources. And of course, they are key pollinators for all these native flower species as well. So when you you consider what's happening, and with global warming, the big issue is warming and drying is affecting many species that occur at high elevations on our Sky Island mountain ranges, such as the Oregon Mountains, the Black Range, the Sacramentos. All our mountain ranges in New Mexico support conifer forests at high elevation. Those species that live there are relic populations of more widespread populations during the Pleistocene, and since the last glacial maximum about 20,000 years ago, the climate has been naturally warming from well-known astronomical causes, much slower, though, than the rate right. that's happening now from humans. And over the last 20 to 10,000 years, many species have become isolated on these mountaintops, mm-hmm. including the Sacramento Mountains. There are numbers of endemic species that only live on our mountaintops. That's where they've evolved in the last 20,000 years. So as the climate warms, it gets drier. We're not getting snowpack. There's less moisture. Yep. And all these insects and other animals and plants have evolved life histories with the long-term climate patterns. That is all changing now. We're not seeing a regular monsoon like we used to have. And many species, life histories are cued into moisture and temperature regimes from these historic climates. So that's a big impact. The other is aquatic invertebrates across the state. Those that live in lakes, rivers, streams, and wetlands are suffering because those places are drying sure. up. And most of those have been impacted by humans already since the 1800s. Because we need the water. The humans need the water. So as we take water and habitat, we're eliminating that from native species.
Actually, let me interrupt you for a moment. You mentioned bees, and I'm curious. I know that fairly recently it appeared to be a real problem that there were some species of African bees, I think it was, that was killing local bees or honeybees. How serious a problem is that?
That's not such a problem anymore. You're referring to the African honeybee, which is a subspecies of the European honeybee that evolved in Africa. And those bees evolved with things like honey badgers. If you're familiar with honey badgers, they are very ferocious badgers that occur in Africa. So the African honeybees evolved to fight honey badgers and other predators that attack their hives. So they are more aggressive than regular European honeybee, which is what we use primarily because they are more docile. So the African honeybees were introduced into Brazil. They expanded rapidly throughout South America into southern United States. However, being a subspecies of the European honeybee, as they mixed with European honeybees that we brought over here in the 1600s, they have been genetically mixed now with European honeybee genes. So they're not pure African honeybees. They're not as aggressive, but they still are aggressive. One advantage to the African honeybee is that they are active year-round. Mm. They evolved in tropical, subtropical environments, so they actually produce more honey than the European subspecies, which is dormant during the winter and relies on its winter stores of honey. Africanized bees go all year long, and actually our cool climates are limiting that genetic strain from moving north. So there were a lot of speculations and fears about a decade ago about African honeybees taking over and, you know, attacking people, but they're genetically mixing now with the more docile European.
Glad to hear it. We should note that you folks are going to be talking in the climate series of discussions. And you'll be talking here 5:30 p.m. Friday evening at the Las Cruces Museum of Nature and Science on Art Walk Night.
I wanted to ask about the mosquitoes. When I think about flying insect, the first thing that comes to my mind is mosquitoes and all of the horrible, you know, spreading malaria and the death and destruction that they cause. And so we do massive spraying of chemicals in order to try to combat that. How much of the decline of other species is, you know, as a result of our trying to reduce the population of mosquitoes?
We don't know that in New Mexico. There just hasn't been enough research.
Right.
I'm going to let Simon talk, but one thing I want to mention is we do have about 100 native species of mosquitoes here in New Mexico, and a number of those are high-elevation sky island species. So many of our native species of mosquitoes that we don't spray as pests because they live up in the high elevations are probably declining right now. And at lower elevations, species that are not native to the region, like the Asian tiger mosquito that transmits all kinds of diseases, including dengue fever and yellow fever, is moving up the Rio Grande Valley with global warming. It's now here in Albuquerque. About 10 years ago, it was only found as far north as Truth or Consequences. So that species is cosmopolitan. It lives with humans. It's not native. That's one thing to consider. As far as spraying, I'm going to let Simon talk about that.
Yeah, that's a terrific question. And we don't really, as Dave was saying, know the answer to that because it's really hard to prove and it's really hard to get data on these non-target species during the spray. But we think that it certainly is contributing to the declines of many of our pollinators, at least historically. And one we look to a lot is the Sacramento Mountains, which has so many endemic, unique species. A lot of them seem to start taking a dip around the mid-80s. And in both 1983 and 1984, they sprayed almost 200,000 acres of the Sacramento Mountains with pesticides to combat a spruce budworm outbreak. And so, like, you can't necessarily put a one-to-one there, but it's, like, seems to make sense.
Sure.
And I really wanted, really quickly wanted to go back to your question about what plants to plant for pollinators in Las Cruces, because I think that's such a great question. And what I generally tell people, and we're working on tools to try to make this easier for people to figure out what to plant, but what I generally recommend is any plants with lots of small flowers, because the pollinators will just hang out and they'll go to each small flower. So like things like milkweeds, chamisa, things that are drought resistant and have a lot of those small flowers that can provide for a lot of pollinators. So,
yeah, neat. What's a good source for people to, you know, if somebody's listening and they think, oh yeah, I'd like to plant some more appropriate plants in my garden. What's a good source? Because, you know, very often the local folks who sell plants are, you know, trying to help somebody rebuild the East and the West and not thinking about this kind of issue.
The Xerces Society that I mentioned earlier, if you go to their website, and Xerces is spelled X-E-R-C-E-I-S. It's named after a butterfly that went extinct in California. They have a wonderful website with all kinds of information guides for planting and regional plantings. So I would recommend them as a really good starting place. We have several programs here in Albuquerque that advise people on planting in this area for native pollinators, but I think the Xerces Society is a good start.
Also, local county, like, extension agents, or like NMSU extension, and I mean, here at UNM, we're working on trying to build a more spatial tool for people to eventually be able to get pretty localized recommendations for what to plant, but it may still be a few years till we finish that project, so...
Yeah, I know the Extension Service is always a good source for that kind of stuff.
Yes, very much so. One of the things that I know I have noticed in my long life is I used to see a lot of fireflies in the world, particularly growing up back east, and now I don't see them so more. Why?
Well, one of the primary causes is light pollution back east. It's habitat loss and pesticides, but light pollution has a real impact on fireflies because, of course, they fly at night and they use their naturally produced light as signals for mating. So if there are a lot of street lights around or other lights, then they are unable to each other and unable to mate, and they go away. Here in New Mexico, we've got about a dozen species of fireflies, native fireflies. We're still, several are undescribed. Here in New Mexico, they only live in riparian wetlands, mostly at higher elevations. There is a species in the Oregon Mountains that's known from McGarry Springs, for example, or at least it was there. We don't know if it's there anymore. We are working with a person with the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. She is producing a document on New Mexico fireflies, and so she's actually been doing surveys around the state for them. And having trouble finding them in places where they used to be. And here in New Mexico, it's probably mostly climate change. The fact that fireflies require very damp habitats. Their larvae feed on snails. And our damp habitats are going away because of climate change.
Let me ask you, we have a listener question that somebody called in and asked Minerva to ask me to ask you.
In 2 minutes.
Yeah, we're also nearly out of time, but
1 minute.
The question of the dying out of mosquitoes, how does that affect bats?
Well, mosquitoes are an important food source for bats, depending on location and species. But certainly in the mountains, where we probably are losing mosquitoes now from climate change, mm-hmm. undoubtedly it is having an adverse impact on bats. But that's something that's difficult to document. We actually have people here at the museum and the USGS studying bat diets around New Mexico. But mosquitoes are really hard to detect in their in their guts, in their fecal samples, because they're digested. So we do know that bats eat mosquitoes, and in places where mosquitoes are common, they're an important food source. Yes.
We need to move on in a moment. Want to thank you, Dr. David Lightfoot and PhD candidate Simon Dineski. You guys will be talking at the Las Cruces Museum of Science and Nature on Main Street, 5:30 Friday evening, and look forward to that. And thanks again for visiting with us.
You're very welcome, and we appreciate the opportunity to get the information out.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, okay. And maybe see you Friday. Hope so.